Welcome to the Ausländer. So, welcome to the new episode of the Ausländer. Today we have Marc Granado here. He's an old friend, really one of the old friends. We know each other from primary school back in Sabadell, our hometown. I think we started school together, no? When we were three?
Yeah, I think we might meet back. So our meeting might be back from when we were 3 years old, yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe since we were in different rooms, maybe it was slightly later than that. But yeah, then if I remember properly, then later we like get closer together when we started playing football together in school and stuff like that. So yeah.
Yeah.
It goes back to from three to 8 years old.
Yeah. So quite a long time ago. We also share quite of a big group of friends that we're coming mainly from football. So, Marc, it's originally from Sabadell, as I already said, in a city close to Barcelona. And he's currently living in Birmingham, UK, since 2 years. Yeah.
Correct? Yeah, I moved in Birmingham September 2019, mm-hmm. to be precise. Yeah. And because I started my PhD here, and ever since I've been moving a little bit back and forth to Barcelona, spending summers there, because everyone in their right mind, if they can choose to spend their summer in Barcelona or in Birmingham, they would always choose Barcelona. But yeah, that's a little bit my story. Yeah.
Cool. You went to Birmingham because of studies. So you are doing a PhD there.
Correct? Yeah, exactly. So, when I finished my master's degree, I went for a couple of months to Geneva for like summer internship, and I was supposed to do my PhD there, but then I decided I was not 100% sure that was what I wanted to do, and mm-hmm. I started looking for staff somewhere else, and I found Birmingham, and Birmingham found me. They suggested the project that I actually liked, and here I am.
Cool.
Yeah.
What is your PhD about? If you can tell a little bit more.
my PhD is in medical applications of particle physics. And so from there, you tell me how much do you want me to talk about it.
No, I mean, feel free. Just if you have the typical explanation that everyone asks after you say that name, because nobody understands what it is. It's
the easy thing to say would be that my project regards trying to get a CT image, like what you do with X-rays when you mm-hmm. perform a CT scan. Those ones that go around your body and get a 3D image of your body. But instead of doing it with X-rays, we want to do it with protons, because this would allow us to get much lower dose on the patient. And also, this would allow us to treat properly radiotherapy with protons instead of X-rays. And this has a massive effect on lowering the toxicity of the treatment. So, mm-hmm. Affecting much more the tumor and not damaging the healthy tissue. So that would be a little bit worse. Imaging with protons.
Okay. Sounds interesting. So is Birmingham kind of a reference on this kind of studies field? So you are like in a study group, like you have colleagues who are studying with you, other PhD students, or it's part of the university, or?
Yeah. It is part of the university. It's actually a little bit weird, because there is a group on medical applications, and there is a section of these medical applications that's precisely focused on proton CT, which is my project. But my project tries to use a new kind of detectors, new kind of technologies that no one used before. So in the end, the people who's working on the same project are not using the same detector, so I'm not working with them. I'm on a standalone project, let's say, and it's me and my supervisor who it's not the most organized person, so I could say that I haven't worked with anyone for the last month. I've just been working on my own without any kind of supervision, apart from the 2 minutes I can find him while he's having a coffee and stuff like that. But yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that that happens a lot with PhDs. When I talk with other PhD students at the end, they are like running alone and trying to find the the teachers or the people responsible to supervising them whenever they can. So, back in Geneva, you were finishing the master there, you said? Or...
Yeah, so once I finished my master's, I just did an internship so I could, enhance the analysis that I was working on. And I moved there and worked with I was working on a big office with 10 people, and it was a shared project, and everyone was there sharing experiences and work. That was much more a working experience in group rather than what I have right now. And actually, one of the reasons I was actually tempted to choose that PhD was because I really loved the people I was working with. Mm. And then I was like, yeah, I like the people, but I don't like the job that I need to do. So I don't want to be spending 4 years and a half just working on something that I'm not 100% sure I like. So I decided to leave the team.
Okay, nice. I mean, you were there for only 2 months, you said, so...
Yeah, exactly.
How is life in Geneva? Because, I mean, I've lived nearly 4 years in Germany now, and more or less the Zurich side or the part close to Constanza, I know it more or less how it's the life more close to the German style. It's Geneva... Yes. Closer to the French, as it's the border of the opposite of Switzerland?
Yeah, it is much closer, because I was actually, so to be fair, I was living in Saint-Denis-Pouilly, so my house was in France, because I couldn't pay with the rent I was paying, I couldn't afford anything that was in actual Geneva, but I brought my motorbike there so I could commute everywhere. Mm. And I was really lucky, I have to say, because my first 2 weeks, it was a big festival in Geneva. So every week there was something to do. It was gigs on the streets. There was a festival. There was a fair. And I already had a friend living in there for those 2 weeks. So before I started having my uni friends, I already had someone to meet during the week, and every day we would go to the fair, go to a couple of gigs, and then go back home, and so I could keep on with my social life. And then after 2 weeks she left, and I already had my uni friends, so we started I could start doing stuff with them as well. So I was actually very lucky, you know. It was really nice. And life in Geneva, that's it. It was during the festival, so it was more festive, I would say, maybe than at any other time, but it was really nice as well. Yes. So I could say it was more similar to France rather than Germany, definitely.
So it was summer then, or
yeah exactly. It was June and August.
Okay. That's good months to be in Switzerland. when winter comes, it's not that nice.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, I mean, talking about bad weather and rainy days, you went to one of the most waterish countries in the world, let's say like this. How is Birmingham in that sense? How do you feel? The change, or because it's something that we have talked a lot in this podcast, a lot of people who is living currently in Germany, people who's been in Switzerland, and most of them are always saying, okay, the worst part is always the weather. And I think UK has also this kind of a fame of a rainy.
It is very rainy, but I have to say that I would never say that. And if I have to say something regarding the weather, it would never be the rain, because and even though I'm cycling everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. So cycling under the rain is a mess. Obviously no one is gonna like that. But if you get prepared, I have my waterproof pants and my jacket, and I can stand the rain. But what I hate about this weather is the wind. Because if it's rainy and it's super windy, it moves me from the bike. It's like it, sometimes I'm about to fall from my bike just because of a wind hit. And this is what I hate about the weather. But it's raining. It usually rains almost every day. So if you go out and it's sunny in the morning, you know it's going to be raining in the afternoon. But also it's almost every day sunny as well at some point. So if you go out in the morning and it's raining, you know almost for sure that in the afternoon it's gonna be sunny. Not always, because
you have a half and a half, so it just depends.
Yeah, so almost every day you see the sun, you know, so it's not that bad. Although I have to say that in May last year, it was the the wettest May ever registered in the UK.
Okay.
That was a complete mess because for like 3 weeks, we didn't see the sun. And it was the 3 weeks we started being like allowed to go out after COVID. Mm. So once like pubs reopened, but just the gardens, and it was raining every day, and it was rain and just rain, rain, really windy as well. I remember one day going to bouldering for some climbing, mm, and a friend who was he's Brit, so he knows the weather. I was like, man, I just realized that I'm not happy these days, you know. I haven't seen the sun in 2 weeks now, and I realize that I'm not happy just because I cannot see the sun. It's not, the weather is like a complete mess. Today I was cycling to uni, and it was raining. It was super windy. And I just yelled, "Fuck it! Come on! Like, stop it now!" I just like had the urge of yelling to like the weather or whatever, you know, and try to like make it stop. It didn't stop, but at least I felt slightly better after yelling a little bit and releasing some steam.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, I can totally feel you in this sense. It's just like Germany, it's not a good country for that either. Like a lot of, I would say weeks without seeing the sun. I think also like last year was pretty dark generally. So yeah. I mean, now that I'm in Greece, I'm happy about that. In that sense, I mean, I see the sun a lot.
Fair enough, yeah.
So, we switched from Geneva to Birmingham really fast, let's say like this, but through the weather, do you have any other experience that you how it came, like the movement between... So did you jump directly from Geneva or you went back to Barcelona?
No, I went back to Barcelona and spent a couple of years in Barcelona looking for PhD positions here and there. And then I moved to the UK. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the movement to the UK was rather easy. I mean, at the end, when you have like a position that you know that you're going for something specific already, it makes things easy. But it's Birmingham, a city where there is a lot of international people, or it's more like...
Yeah, so I have to say Birmingham is a very university city. So for instance, in my university, I think there is something close to 6,000 students, but it's, and there's loads of international people, but it's not so cosmopolitan as London would be, you know. It's more in the middle of the island, so somehow you can feel that it's more old-fashioned rather than what you expect to see in other cities like London, or if you would go to Manchester, I think it would also be a little bit more international. Manchester, Liverpool, Birmingham is a little bit more old-fashioned, but it's easy at least. And even after Brexit, you don't feel like, you feel like you're an outsider, but you feel like there's... Lots of people who are also from in the same situation you are, because you're a student, and also students here in the UK, they always move to a new city. So even though it might not be international, all of them come from other cities, so they are not feeling at home either, right?
Yeah. So it's also like kind of students coming from other parts of UK coming ending in Birmingham, which is funny because at the end, it's not one of the places that you think first. No, I mean, it's always coming Oxford and, and whatever, but or Cambridge, but But it's true. I mean, I was in Birmingham like a long time ago, but I,
how were you? I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, I was just a couple of days or 3 days there, but I remember.
There's not much more to see.
Yeah, that's. So, yeah, just one of the things that makes. Do you move a lot through UK itself? So, because I remember, I mean, one of the passions that we share is motorbikes. I think like both of us had a motorbike, and I suppose one of the advantages of Birmingham is that it's literally the center of UK. So exactly. From there, so you can go everywhere.
The best thing about Birmingham is this, that you're an hour and a half away from almost everywhere, an hour and a half away from London, Liverpool, Manchester, Wales, maybe it's a couple of hours. So for me, this is going to be a sad moment, but before the sad moment, I usually travel quite a lot because I have lots of friends in London, and one of my best friends here in Birmingham is from Wales. Mm-hmm. So I go a lot to London, partying with some friends, and then with this other guy, we go to Wales at least once a month, I would say, and go to the mountains, some hiking or to the beach, stuff like that, spend the weekend in there. So yeah, I was used to travel a lot, but usually by train or with my friend's car. So then this winter, I decided I would bring my motorbike here because I said, all right. Last year, on May and April was really sunny. This is 2 years ago. Not this April, not this May. It was really sunny, so maybe I can bring my motorbike and have some fun here and go here and there and maybe higher to the north because I've never been there. Made my plan, took my motorbike, drove all the way from Spain to Birmingham. In January, so at -2 degrees, crossing through France at -2 degrees, crossing the canal.
You cross. So you made it with your motorbike. You didn't ship.
Yeah, I made it with my motorbike. Exactly. Nice. No. The old-fashioned way. The cool.
Nice.
If you want to bring your motorbike, you have to ride it, right?
I will not say that. I mean, I just ship. I ship mine from Germany to Athens. But yeah, sure.
Well, yeah, fair enough. Because you needed to move, so it's not the same. I was already in Birmingham, so although I can show you some pictures, I took that trip with Ari Roche,
mm-hmm.
from Scalopi as well.
Yeah.
She was going to Lille, so she provided places where to sleep in France because she has friends in Lyon and friends in Lille. So I had those stops. That was really nice. But then I got my motorbike here in Birmingham, and it got stolen
before
I could use it.
Really?
So I just had it for a month here, and the day before I was supposed to move, I started feeling sick. I was moving from a house to another.
Mm-hmm.
I started feeling sick, and you know, COVID times. So I said, all right, let's get a PCR test. Because I don't want to move into a house with five other people and be infected. So I went to the doctors, get the PCR test, and after having my motorbike in there for a month, like suffering the rain and the snow and cold, I thought, all right, let's just like give it a good clean, pump the tires, fill the tank. So I left it pretty nice, you know? And that was on Saturday, the day I was supposed to move. And the day after, on Sunday, when I started like actually moving because I got my test and it was negative, I went downstairs, main door, and my motorbike was no longer there.
So
and I can tell you, I felt...
You literally cleaned the motorbike for someone else. Nice.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it looks so nice, so irresistible that some guy just thought it was... It shouldn't be stopped
it
there.
Was time.
It should be used. Yeah.
Man, sorry to hear that.
Really sad story. But
so you don't lose your motorbike in Barcelona where everyone gets stolen.
Exactly, exactly. That's the thing.
Guys.
I had my bike in Barcelona for 7 years. It never got stolen. And I thought, it cannot be worse. I mean, no one is going to want to have a motorbike in the UK. It rains every day, so no one is going to steal it.
Yeah.
For I know it might have been a 16 years old kid who just wanted to have it for a little while and then maybe burn it in some yard. This happens sometimes in here.
So yes.
Now I know that.
Or it ends in the river. That's the alternative.
Exactly. Or one of the canals, because I have to say, proud from Birmingham, we have more canals than Venice. Everyone has to know. It's a European city with most canals in the world.
More than Venice.
More than Venice, yeah.
But not as beautiful as Venice.
Maybe not as beautiful. That's a matter of perception.
Of taste, yes.
You know, that's subjective. What is not subjective is that we have more canals.
So yeah, just as a quick introduction of the drink that Mark wanted to took today. So he just went for a punk APA from BrewDog, so staying British. I don't know if they will agree to that. I don't know if they are Scottish independentists or not, but
exactly.
I mean, they're from Scotland. Let's clean our hands
from the island. They are still in the island, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I actually couldn't find it here in Greece. I mean, I find a place where they sell it at 14 kilometers from Athens. So it was a little bit too much for a beer. So, but yeah.
Definitely not worth the effort.
I mean, I like it. It's a good beer. I must say that I'm not a big fan of all the BrewDog ones. They have some ones that are okay. Some others I don't like that much. But I mean, that's also depending if you really like APA or more craft beer style, because of course it comes strong. So yeah, switching back to the topic, I think you just passed through two of the main things that I need to ask to you, which is, I don't know if you want to go first with Brexit or COVID.
So Brexit, actually, I have to say that I haven't been affected that much by Brexit. The only thing that I have been affected by is that I lost one flight, because the thing they are doing with Brexit is they are changing rules every couple of months. So for instance, Brexit happened. I was not affected at all. Then 1 year later, I had to prove that I was working in the UK before December 2019. So I could get a pre-settlement status. So then I could still live in the UK without any problem.
Mm-hmm.
But since I'm, but the thing is with Brexit is that it depends on what you're working on. They are going to be like more on top of you or less. Since I'm working on a researcher status, this is like the highest level you can be. And then you're untouchable.
I mean,
they want these kind of people.
Below,
what they don't want is
below truck drivers, but yeah, sure.
Exactly. Now we know truck drivers, but yeah. So I was never affected. But then actually this month, when I was coming back from Barcelona this summer, I don't know why, I just didn't take my passport with me.
That's a great decision, man.
I just forgot it. I always take it, but I know that I can travel with my ID, even though Brexit, I could travel with my ID ever since, right?
You can?
But then, I could. That's the point. I could. I traveled the 2nd of October, and they changed the rule. So you couldn't travel anymore with your ID the 1st of October, since the 1st of October. So I went there. I tried to travel with my ID, and they said, no. You cannot travel with your ID anymore after Brexit. And I was like, no way. I mean, I've been traveling with my ID for 2 years after Brexit, so why? No. They changed it yesterday. And I was like, really? And obviously, I didn't have time to go back to my house and back to Barcelona in time for the flight, so I lose my flight. That's how Brexit has affected me.
But I mean,
apart from that,
you needed to do some bureaucracy at the end, for sure. I mean,
yeah. I needed to do this pre-settlement status, but that was maybe an hour of my life, even though it was bureaucracy, it was online, so it was not too bad.
Okay. Well, that's I mean, big advantage is that it's in English. So
exactly,
you don't have a language problem.
Exactly, there is no language barrier, so it's much easier. But I have a friend, for instance, who's working in a cafe, and for her it was much harder because the hoops you need to go through if you're not working in a, like, I don't know how they call it, like skilled work or something like that. Then it's so much harder for you to stay in the UK. And people who obviously wanted to travel after Brexit, life is much harder for them. But I think I was here for in perfect time for not being affected that much by Brexit.
I mean, have you feel it? I mean, not personally, but have you seen it that people is living, I mean, from the university, or people are like just saying, okay, I need to go out because of this in any case.
I haven't seen any effect from any of my friends, or apart from that, like just bureaucracy being harder for you and stuff like that. But no one has in my group of friends or in my surroundings, let's say, no one has to have to say that I'm also very like close to loads of British people, so obviously they don't have any problem. But I have to say that apart from the bureaucracy problems, nothing stronger than that. It was, I remember once, the funniest thing I've remembered from that is once I was sending some packages away from my flatmate who left the apartment because of COVID and never came back. So all the things that he had, I had to send them away. And when I had to send them, I had to, like, again, do some bureaucracy stuff, register the stuff that I was sending to Rome and all these things. And when I was giving it to the guy from the transport company, he was saying, oh yeah, this shit is so crazy. The amount of hoops that we need to jump through because of Brexit. And I was like, yeah, they didn't know they were voting for this shit when they were voting. And the guy says, yeah, we didn't know we were voting for this shit. So he was actually a progressive and now complaining about the consequences of Brexit. And he's like, what did you gain from Brexit apart from the fact that you need to jump for more hoops through more hoops? Just with in your day-to-day life. So I'm certain that the only thing he has felt in his day-to-day life is pain after COVID. So that's what they get. That's what they vote. That's what they get.
Yeah, I mean, it's a double blade, no? At the end, it's always this kind of point of how much, I mean, convincing population of voting something at the end, and how much really people understand what they are voting. So I think it's a clear case of that. And yeah, I mean, I mean, at least from outside of UK, you hear a lot of news and a lot of people like saying, okay, I did vote for the Brexit in favor, but now if I would vote again, I would say no directly. But yeah, that's the main problem. There is no way back, or from a political perspective, there is no way back, because it's not that easy that they get accepted. Even if they voted again, it's not coming back. It's not that easy, you know.
there is no chance they are going to vote it back again, and definitely they are not going to be accepted after what has happened so far. I think it was it was the kind of move that the right wants to do, because they convince people that people from Europe are taking their jobs and stuff like that. And in the end, it was a xenophobic move for most of the people, because most of the people who were voting were from the countryside, not main villages, but countryside, and thinking that it was going to fix their economic problems because they weren't going to find jobs and stuff like that. But then all of a sudden, what happened was that they didn't have anyone to like collect their crops and collect their fields. Yeah. They were begging for the Romanians they were kicking out 2 years ago. Now they are begging for them to come back and collect the crops. So it's a little bit of a, this kind of stupid problem that obviously, a person who doesn't speak your language and who's new to the country and has no contacts, these people are not going to steal your job. They are going to do some job that you don't want to do. It's not
exactly
the same.
That's always everywhere. Like that's the typical xenophobic and populist this talk that all the right movements are using right now in Germany, in Poland, in Spain, in UK. The main difference is that in UK historically, let's say like this, they tend to politically bring to these movements really strong, so the people really goes into it. I mean, you can remember Generation 69 with the whole skinhead movement turning into whatever. You can still see the hooligan masses of extreme left, extreme right hooligan football teams involved in there and everything. By tradition, also UK, it's kind of a revolutionary somehow, like in this sense.
Yeah, and I think in every social sense, because for instance, one thing that I see here, and even more in London, because obviously, as I said before, here it's a little bit more old fashioned, but in London, you see a freedom of everything, like everyone is. Like, can go to the extreme on whatever they want. Like, in Barcelona, for instance, you wouldn't see a queer movement as big as the scene that you see in London. Or, as you said earlier, when there was the skinhead movement, or all these social movements, they are more free. And I think it's a little bit because no one is looking at each other and judging that as much as maybe we do in Barcelona. So you select your path and you go through it, and then you find the people who's like in the same wave you are, and that's it. Yeah, in the same mood. And you don't go through as much judgment if you one day decide to like dye your hair pink.
Yeah,
in Barcelona, it would be crazy.
Yeah, but that's the main thing. At the end, I think all of this also comes with a size of cities, because at the end, the mentality in Barcelona could be like this, and it's, you see it in the small groups or whatever. It's not as big as it could be in London or Berlin, for example, in this sense. But of course, the size of the city, it's absolutely different. If you need to comparing and analyzing everything that happens in London or Berlin, it's impossible. I mean, we are talking about 10 million people living in there.
10 million
people
in London, yeah.
What? You are,
yeah, yeah, that's
you don't have time to analyze everyone in London. So.
Exactly, yeah. You just go and do your thing, and that's it. Fair enough, yeah.
Whatever, definitely. Do whatever you want. You know, I'm going to the market. What the fuck?
Exactly. I have my own struggles in my life. I'm not gonna judge you for yours.
Exactly, definitely. So yeah, I mean, we've gone a little bit into politics now, but maybe we can turn it a little bit around. Do you have any crazy moment in Birmingham that you say, okay, this is something that it's worth it to tell? That I remember that it was like, wow, this, I was not expecting it.
I may have one of these moments, but it's funny because it would be like maybe my first night in Birmingham, because you know me. The audience may not know me, but I'm not a person who like usually plans things and is a very organized person. But when I decided to go to Birmingham, then all of a sudden, in that summer, I got a week in which my boss said, all right, you have this week free, so do whatever you want. And I didn't have anything planned. None of my friends have a free week. So I just thought, all right, you never thought about this possibility, but what if you go to Birmingham before you start living there? You look and like try to rent, look for an apartment to rent, look for a room, meet your supervisors, meet the city. So once you go there, you already know something, right?
So you started to be organized for once in your life.
Exactly. Exactly. Just because I mean, I had no other option. So I thought, yeah, that's maybe the best plan I can do. And I went for a couple of days in London and then for a couple of days in Birmingham. And I couch surfing. I guess people here knows what it is, but in case they don't know, it's a website, social network in which you can ask for people to host you in their couch, rent free, and you can do the exact same thing on your house. Mm-hmm. And I went couch surfing with this couple of guys, really nice, Alex and Mauricio. They hosted me and they were really nice. So I got into their place. They just gave me a beer and I saw they were like, it was a little bit hectic in the house. They were cooking and everything. And all of a sudden they tell me, wait, did we tell you? And I was like, tell me what? They were like, well, because on Thursday, like the last Thursday of every month, we usually have this flat art gallery because Mauricio is an artist. And we host these dinners with different artists from the sea, and we expose some art, have some wine, and share the experiences and art and discuss about it. And I was like, no, you didn't tell me. And they were like, well, do you actually mind? And I was like, no, it's fine. So all of a sudden, I found myself into a dinner with different artists around the city, sharing experiences, sharing different pieces of art, commenting on the art that they had. They placed everything as if it was an actual gallery. And I had one of these, like, I was a bit drunk and a bit high, and I had one of these moments in which, like, I could see myself from above and thought, like, how on earth did you end up here? Like a guy who's like just willing to do their PhD in the UK and ended up being in a like art gallery, super bohemian thing. And then we ended up going to a club. They knew the boss, so we got free drinks. It was a bit of a crazy night that I was definitely not expecting. And the best thing was that I liked the guys. I liked Alex and Mao, and they liked me. So once I got back here, we were like, oh, we should meet again. And now they are my best friends here. So Ooh. It was a like an unexpected way to like actually meet people and make friends. So once I was going back to Birmingham, I already meet some. I already knew someone. So it was really nice.
That's a good thing to have, like some context already in place, and that's cool. So now you are producing art, or
no, I'm not yet.
Not
there.
Yet.
Not yet. I have pieces of art here in my room, but I'm collecting my own gallery, but not yet. I'm not that guy. I'm the guy who looks and says I like it, but
or not.
Not the guy who.
You need to be critical. Nice. Yeah, just another question that I normally do here in the podcast, and it's just normally putting people in a little bit of problems sometimes. So that's fine if you don't want to really generalize. But do you have like a thing that you love from UK and a thing that you hate from UK?
So I think I would say I love from here is what we said before. Maybe not UK. Maybe it's Birmingham. But it's the fact that I'm close to everywhere. So I come from Sabadell. It's not the best city in the world, but it's close to Barcelona. It's close to Costa Brava. It's close to the Pyrenees. You can go everywhere with an hour and a half, 2 hours drive. And I have the same feeling here in Birmingham. I also cycle everywhere, and everything is 15 minutes away. Mm-hmm. This is something that wouldn't happen, for instance, if I was in London. You always need to take the public transport, and it's always going to be moving from one place to another. It's always going to be 1 hour at least.
Yeah.
So the fact that I like from Birmingham is that everything is close, and even though it's a really big city, but the city center and the surroundings are not that big. So unless you live in the suburbs, then it's actually really nice and everything is close. So that would be my favorite thing of Birmingham. Everything is a bridge.
Sounds cool. I mean, and still, it's not in a small city. It's
exactly,
like,
no,
it's a big city. Like
it's the like, second city in the UK. It's exactly. 2 million people living here, and everything is a bridge. It's
not bad. I mean, that means
not too bad.
More people than Barcelona. More people than Barcelona, so, actually. So
more or less, not too bad.
And the hated one. Now let's go conflictive.
The hated one, I would say, it's definitely either the weather plus the weather, as in wind plus rain. This I hate it. But I don't know if it would be the worst. Yeah. I mean, it would be the worst thing, but it's not that bad, you know? Because I don't think there is a really bad thing of living here. I like it here, so I wouldn't say
I
hate the weather.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, one of the big things that we discuss with other people and other guests from the podcast, it's always like the language barriers of arriving to a country where you don't speak the language. So I think in the case of going to UK or United States in this sense, it's rather easy if you have a good level of English, which is not a common thing in Spain also. But
that was actually one thing I was thinking when I was listening to your first podcast with Carlota. Because I thought, when I was looking for positions around Europe, I was always avoiding Germany. Because I didn't want to go to a country in which I would be working 8 hours working in English, and then if I was going outside, I needed to socialize or anything, I would need to change the language and learn another language that I know that is really hard. So I was like, all right, I know I can learn French, I can learn Italian really easily. Mm. So this I accept. I accept going to England. But going to Germany, that was a big no for me. So
I think it's not one of
big
the
respect reasons. For that. Big respect for that.
and also
now for you to moving now to Greece, which you even use a completely new alphabet. So
I mean, I think every 3 years I need to change or something like this. It's the new rule or to complicate my language skills even more.
Exactly.
Right now, I really don't know in which language my brain is working anymore. So, okay. So, but it's a big advantage, I suppose, to arrive to a place and just really have at least the assurance that everyone will understand, you know,
exactly.
Everyone, if they want to understand you, because that's another thing.
You think you know English, but then you move into Birmingham and you're like, wait, that's not the same language. That's definitely not the same language.
Oh, you're still kind of in the British, understandable British, let's say like this.
Yeah, in order to prepare myself, because my main supervisor is from Birmingham, and when I had my first interview with him, I realized I could get most of what he was saying, but there were some stuff that I couldn't get. So I was like, all right, I'm going to go and watch Peaky Blinders again, all again, without subtitles, so I can like get into the language again. And the accent and everything. So I moved here into Birmingham, and I was like, all right. First time I went to a coffee shop and wanted to get my coffee, I was like, all right. Anybody says hello or anything like that, people, when they get into places, they say morning. So I'm going to be morning, and I'm going to feel like I'm a local. And I say morning, and the woman there says, Aya. And I was like, what? That's a new thing. What's Aya? Who says Aya?
Aya.
And everyone says Aya.
Aya. It's a kind of German thing also.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't know where it came from, but it was like, all right.
It's curious, but in the north of Germany also they use Aya.
Aya.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And that's that's what happens. Like Peaky Blinders doesn't teach you all the accent, all the words from programming.
It doesn't teach you everything. Damn it. But the different accents here in the UK was the thing, because I, for instance, when I'm at uni, I know what almost everyone is going to talk about, and most of people here at uni, they have pretty standard accents, so it's pretty easy to understand them. But then I started playing rugby at the uni team, and there I started meeting loads of people from different places from UK. Different accents, strong accents. They haven't like changed yet because they haven't been here in Birmingham or in a university environment for much longer. And they are kids, so they go partying every day. I obviously life. Don't because I cannot stand their pace. So most of the times they are talking about stuff that I don't know with a really strong accent. And the first time I was in like one of the socials with them, I felt like, oh, fuck. I mean, it's the first time in very long time in which I feel like I'm not getting in there, because one thing I used to measure if I'm going to the language is like if I can introduce jokes into the conversation, you know? Because if you're getting everything, you're gonna be able to like make a joke, but if you're really need to think what they are saying, you're half a second behind, and then you want to make the joke, but they're already talking about something else. And this would happen to me when I was with the rugby lads, and it was like, oh, fuck, I'm not in there yet. But then, yeah, that just getting used to the accents helped me a lot. But definitely moving to somewhere like Germany for me, it would have been a really big deal, I think.
Yeah, I mean, at the end, I feel you in this, because I start playing futsal again here in Greece. So,
oh, nice.
Now it happens. Like, actually, like this last weekend, I played the first 5 minutes into the team, and it's.
Are you still a goalie?
Yeah, still goalkeeper. Yeah. Not, I don't have the skills to go out of the goal. So,
but you're a really good goalie, so it makes.
Let's see. I mean, I need to pick up the rhythm again, but yeah, sure.
Yeah, fair enough.
And it's exactly like that. But I mean, I'm there, and we go after training, and we go for some beers or for having dinner or whatever. And of course, the whole team speaks Greek, and I'm there, and I'm just listening, and it's just like, okay, but. At the end, they're playing about futsal, and it arrives to a point where I am starting to understand more words about sports than any other things. So yeah, it's exactly. Kind of weird. But yeah, that's one of the big things. I mean, I think it helps a lot if you have also like people who is, so it's kicking a little bit you out of your comfort zone in this sense. So yeah, that's nice.
Definitely.
I will propose you to just take a small break, grab another beer, and we come back.
Okay, sure.
So we are back. We grab a beer, and Mark put his rugby jacket on because it's winter. It's coming.
Winter is coming, indeed.
We were talking
at least in the UK, not in Greece, for what I've heard.
No, but not really, not yet. It will arrive, I suppose. I think like January and February are cold months, but the rest of the year it's quite warm. Yeah, taking advantage of the rugby league here. What's the rugby team? Because we. I don't know the audience, but everyone who knows a rugby team knows the third part of the match. No, it's called like that. Like
third half.
Yeah. It's always drinking a lot and party hard.
But yeah. So first of all, I have to say that though that I play rugby league, which is not rugby union, And at least in our university, the rugby league team, they are crazy, but maybe not as crazy as the rugby union. Because I've heard stuff about the rugby union. And I'm glad. I'm really glad I'm not playing with them. Because here in the UK, since everyone, as I said before, everyone moves in to a new city for uni, and you put 18-year-old kids into new housings. They don't know anything. Their first year, they just need to pass with a 40%, so they can party hard, and they have these social initiations for every kind of society they engage in. Like,
so that's
sports
a thing?
Or anything.
That's really a thing? Okay.
Yeah. It is really, it's massive. Like, everyone plays a sport or even in a society. My first week, I went to the, like, sports fair. And it felt like it was a US, classic US film. Okay. And you see the sports fair in the university campus team. And it was like, oh, this looks like pretty like American. And then all of a sudden, this guy approaches me and asks me, hey, do you want to play rugby? And I was like, well, when I was a kid, I wanted to play rugby. But my father said, you're too small. You're fast, but you're too small. What if you like just go and practice athletics? And I was like, yeah, makes sense. So I practiced athletics for 10 years when I was in Barcelona. But I was getting injured. So I thought, let's change the sport now that I'm in the UK. Let's go
exactly.
And play rugby.
If you get injured easily, what better than rugby? Yeah.
Yeah, that's what people tell me. But I'm getting less injured now than when I was practicing athletics. So my problem is not me interacting with other people. My problem is me running by myself. You know, so it's fine.
Actually, you made a progression from you started with futsal, so indoor football. And then you jumped to athletics, as far as I remember. Like, you quit futsal.
I quit futsal. Then, well, I started with basketball. Then I practiced athletics for a year when I was 9 years old. Then I went back to futsal for 7 years. Then I played a year and a half of proper, like, normal football. And then 10 years of athletics. And now I'm playing rugby. So, yeah. I've done a little bit of everything. I've never been good at anything. Well, I was a little bit good in athletics for a while, but then injuries stopped my progression. I'm this kind of kid.
I remember, I mean, I've never seen you in the other sports. I can only talk from futsal, but at least the velocity was one of your key points, that's for sure.
Yeah, no. I was fast. But, not very technical.
Are you playing as a wing in rugby?
Definitely. I'm a wing because I know nothing about the... So when I started playing, it was just like, all right, I know nothing about the game. I've never played. To be fair, I have to say, this guy who approached me and said, do you want to play rugby? So I said, yes. And I went to the first training and they accepted me in the team. And I started seeing these weird things like... They were calling the tackles something that doesn't happen usually when you watch a rugby match. They were doing several things that I was not used to when I used to like watch games in the telly. And then I was like, wait, what's happening here? And then I heard something about rugby league and rugby union. And I was like, guys, is there any difference between rugby league and rugby union? What's rugby union and what's rugby league? And it was then when I realized that they were two different sports and not completely different, but yeah, like massively different in the sense of how they are played. But I realized I was playing another sport that from what I thought I was playing. I think maybe the second training, not even the first, because in the first I was just like trying to catch up what was happening in there. So yeah, definitely I cannot be in the middle because I don't know what's happening. I can barely catch the ball. I just catch the ball when I can and run as fast as I can. that's what I do. That's my job, and I'm good at it. So yeah.
Nice. So let's go to the third half of it. Like, crazy party with rugby team.
Crazy party with rugby team is something that I have to say that since they are, it's a uni team, so they are 18, 23 tops, right? So they don't know what the hangover is. For me, it's not the same. I'm already 27, about to turn 28, right? So I usually don't go to socials, but when I do, man, those socials are crazy. Because first time, since I was first year, they make you drink a super cider, which is like a cider quite high on alcohol because it's 7.5. It's Frosty Jacks. I was about to like suggest you to drink this this drink, but I thought this is my like least favorite drink, not my most favorite drink, but it has a story, you know. Which was that the first time I ever played a game, because obviously when I started playing, I started training, I was not playing. First time I played a game, I decided, all right, I'm going to the social later on. And I had to drink 3 liters of this super cider. That's a really cheap cider. You have to think that 1 liter is 175 quid. So quite cheap for what you're having. 7.5 degrees. I got really, really drunk, obviously.
Of course, 3 fucking liters, of course.
we had, so these socials, they are insane. There are so many rules that you need to learn through the social. They start playing games, and they never tell you the rules about the games. And if you miss anything, you have to drink. But then if you don't drink properly, then you have to drink more. So on my first night, I had to like down a pint. And then, because I didn't like bump the empty glass on my chest, I had to down another pint right after that. And it is what it is. You have to do it because everyone is doing it and no one is going to accept you not doing it. And you don't want to be that guy, right? So I had to down 2 pints of this fucking cider. But you know, one thing I realized is that they are crazy, but they are really prepared. So they know what they are doing. It's not like they don't know. So once someone has to down a pint like that, they know there's like massive chances they're going to throw up, they're going to be sick. So every time someone is doing it, there is another person just opening a bag and putting it like just in front of him. So they are really prepared.
Oh man, we need to learn from these people.
These people, they are amazing. Sometimes it gets out of hand, but I've seen in many times I've been with them, just one time the like sink got to the floor, and every time I've been there has been more than one like person getting sick. Oh, I have a picture in my head of like last year during COVID. There were just 2 freshers, and with the new kids, you have to be a little bit hard on them because they are coming from home, living with their parents, and you have to be strong with them. You know, you have to make them feel the real experience, in the real university experience. And they had to drink a lot because they were missing everything. And there was this guy who started being sick. He threw up. We couldn't find any more bags, so he started throwing up on a bucket. Then this other guy had to throw up again. We gave him one of these big pint glasses. You know, the American red glass?
Ah, gosh, yeah.
He started being sick on the glass up to a point in which he filled the whole glass. So once he filled the whole glass, he thought, all right, I'm going to be poking outside the glass now. So it's going to be dirty anyway. So he just poked out of the glass and threw everything he had on the glass on the floor. So it was like, no, man. No.
Shit. Yeah. And kids that doesn't know how to fucking put the washing machine. So
Exactly.
That's the worst part.
Their first month out their parents' house. And the night ended with like the guy in the house throwing them away, calling them an Uber and throwing them away and telling them, yeah, an Uber is going to come in a couple of minutes. Get the fuck out of here. It was like, man. And we ended up going to a crazy party in another house, mixing ourselves with the football guys. Maybe 40, 60 people in there. COVID times, no one cared. It was crazy. These guys are crazy. But they are students, so it makes sense. Like, you cannot keep students living on their own in a like neighborhood that's full of students. Like, maybe there's 40,000 students in the same neighborhood, and keep them from socializing for 2 years, it's just impossible. It's not going to work. You know, it's not going to work.
Man, a lot of testosterone, eh?
yeah, definitely.
Oh, shit. So, yeah, talking about testosterone, I think we talked before and you said you installed Tinder for the first time in your life in
Birmingham. It happened because I told you because I heard that someone here in the podcast said same thing. And yeah, because when I was in Barcelona, you know, there it's really easy to meet new people. So you don't need, at least I didn't need this kind of stuff. And I didn't like it, actually. Mm-hmm. I thought, yeah, I'm not this kind of person, but I'm moving to the UK. I'm moving to Birmingham. I start doing my PhD in physics. In physics, there are not many girls. Something that needs to change, but so far there was just one girl in my group. She became one of my best friends here in Birmingham. So that was one thing, one girl, one of my best friends. Then in the rugby team, which was one of the most activities that I did, social activities that I did, everyone was male, obviously, rugby lads, testosterone again. And then the other social stuff that I did was going with my friends who are a gay couple. So obviously they don't have many female friends who introduced to me, and we're going climbing. And I didn't want to be the kind of guy who would approach a girl on the climbing place. Uh-huh. And be like, hey, so do you find this route really hard?
Cause, how is this 9B going?
Yeah, exactly. So I thought, all right, if I want to interact with girls, if I want to interact with women, maybe I need to download Tinder for the first time. And I started playing Tinder here. And at the first time, it was funny because I got into a couple of dates that were really weird. Like people I didn't actually like, but we went like to the cinema for a couple of times and it was like, yeah, let's have a date. What do you want to do? Maybe go to the cinema. I went to the cinema.
Some place where you cannot talk.
Exactly. It didn't make any sense at all. And then it was people who, the first time I met them, I was already thinking we're never gonna like have an actual date, and maybe never gonna meet again. I mean, if I like her as a person, then maybe we're gonna be friends. But I'm 100% sure nothing is going to happen. So then I thought, all right, maybe you need to be a little bit more exclusive on what you swipe right? Or at least what you end up meeting.
But it's rather difficult. I mean, I met my current partner through Tinder and I'm not going to bullshit in that direction, but it's not easy. I mean, it's what you are doing a social, so a yes or no through visual.
Yeah, exactly.
Thing. First of all, purely physic, and just a short description that could be absolutely false if you want.
Exactly. Because people saying good vibes in their description.
Well, yeah, but even the dad, like even like one of the things
this
that
tells
I realize,
you something.
Yeah, but even with that, I think like it's the opposite also. Like there is a lot of people who are really good talking through a phone, and then when you met them in person, it's just like, what the fuck? Where is the person or the people who I was talking with like through these last 2 weeks?
Exactly. And I'm really bad speaking on the phone. I'm really bad at chatting. So I never do that because what am I going to tell you? What am I going to ask you about? So at the beginning, I tried to like meet up people really early. You know, I'm not going to spend a couple of weeks texting you. Yeah. If I don't know if I like you or if because and that's the thing. That's another thing. I know I'm not going to be able to hold like chatting for a couple of weeks because I'm going to miss out because I don't know how to do that. You know, I'm not good at chatting or texting. So I always suggested to like meet up quite early. But then that's it. I started meeting people who I didn't want to meet. Mm-hmm. So I thought, all right, let's try and be a little bit more exclusive. And after that, I like kind of understood what my profile in Tinder should be and what the profile I should look for was. And I met a couple of girls who I've seen for several months, and now I'm dating a girl as well. I've been dating her for the last 6 months, and we met not on Tinder, on Bumble.
Mm.
But yeah, same thing, same right? Thing. Because if I have to tell you, I think I've never met a girl here in Birmingham through any other method. Okay. I have some friends, but I haven't dated a girl through any other methods. Although I have to also say that since it was COVID and I've met one girl. That's the week before COVID. Now I remember. The week before COVID, I met a girl. But then she moved back to Italy. Mm. So we never met. You know, we're still chatting, but we never met. I've been clubbing maybe in total 10 times since I've been here.
I mean,
I know people in London.
But you've been like two years, and these 2 years have been COVID.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's 1 year and a half has been COVID. In summer, I go back to Spain. So I meet more people in Spain than I meet in Birmingham every time I go there in summer. I meet people in, but mostly when I go back to London, to my friend's house, they usually host parties. And then there I've met loads of people. But here, and that's another thing. When you go clubbing or go partying here, it's not a kind of environment as you would have in Barcelona that's like keen to like meeting new people, interacting with other people. So this Saturday, for instance, we went to a club and went with three friends after going to a football game. And we chat with a couple of girls at the bar, but that was it during the whole night. It's not like as social as it was in Barcelona.
Mm.
So yeah, I think it's different vibes, and also depending on where you go, the kind of people there is. It's not also not people you want to socialize, because the clubs where people is going to be dancing, which is maybe the kind of clubs. People from Barcelona or from Spain like to go, the people who's going there in Birmingham, it's not the kind of people you would like to be with,
yeah.
You know? Mm. So it's a weird compromise you have to find in there.
Crazy. Ugh. So I think we are kind of running out of time, actually, unfortunately.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you've listened to least one episode of the podcast, so I suppose you know when it comes now. So I normally ask these two questions to close. The first one, it's if you have any recommendation that you would say to anyone who is willing to move to the UK as a person who moved there like 2 years ago.
So to the UK in general, I would say that
UK is very nice. UK or Birmingham, whatever you want. Like,
okay. I can give you both. I think to the UK in general would be London is very nice, but very big. So unless you already know someone, it might be a little bit hard to fit in there. Birmingham is nice. Manchester is nice. Liverpool is nice. And the prices in those three cities are much lower. In like rent is maybe half what you pay in Birmingham, it's half what you pay in London. So that's something to think about. And in Birmingham, depending on your age, I would recommend you to, if you're an undergrad below 22 years old, go and live in Selly. Life there is cheap, it's nice, there is everything you want to find in there. If you are older like me, mostly King's Heath and Sturgeley are the places to be right now. Or if you have even more money, you can go to the Jewellery Quarter. And yeah, as in social stuff to do. The best is like Gracia in Barcelona. Mm-hmm. It's a place to go where like all the alternative things happen. There's loads of live music in there. Really nice stuff going on in there. Just yeah, don't be too bothered by the weather. Don't take the bus because it's shit, and enjoy life because people is nice. So enjoy life.
Yeah, I mean, I think I will definitely recommend also, if you come to Greece, don't take the bus. It's also shit. Same rule applies here. Yeah, let's go through the last question then. Do you have any personal or friends project that you want to use the channel of the podcast to recommend and to like use?
Yeah, I mean, I could say that if I was spending every summer in Barcelona, it's because we have a band in Barcelona that's named Rock and Roll, and we play or sing tributes from the 90s, rock, Catalan rock from the 90s. So if people listening to this podcast is in anywhere in Europe or the world and they want to like go back and feel what they used to feel when they were kids, they can come to a gig, or they can try and find the Catalan Society somewhere that wants to book a gig for us. We're really happy to go wherever they take us. So that would be my project to go. Rock, Catalan rock from the 90s, rock and roll. Tend a little bit of rock and be a little bit of rook, as we say.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely put a plus one in here because I heard you, I think, a couple of times live. And yeah, it's a really nice throwback to the 90s in terms of rock, from at least for the Catalan people. And if you are not Catalan, just give it a try. There is a lot of cool music that you might not know and most probably not understand because it's in Catalan, but it's really cool music. So definitely just check it out on the Instagram and on YouTube and Facebook pages. There will be the link to Rock and Roll. Mark, it has been a pleasure. Really, really happy
thank you very much for having me, Mark.
Mark.
Are we going to this point?
Go back. I mean, Mark is the most common name in Catalonia for a lot of years, so that could be more recent. But yeah, it was really, really cool to have you here, and I hope we see each other in person soon.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, and let's see if we can meet maybe in Christmas if you go back to Barcelona again.
Yep, maybe. Okay. Cheers, mate. Thank you. Yeah.